Welcome to the Tipsy Theology Podcast, where we believe it's okay to date a non-Christian, as long as you try to convert them.
What?
How are you?
Good.
That's good. We're into it now.
Oh, we're in the podcast.
We're into the podcast.
The podcast has started, okay.
It was so fluid, you didn't even know we got into it.
Yeah, no, sometimes I'm just not paying attention. You know, I'm in my own little...
Well, to be fair, I didn't warn you.
So. Christian world in my brain where everything is perfect.
This little bubble you got built up. Well, to be fair to you, I didn't tell you.
That's true. You know, there was no preparation for this at all.
Yeah, we just kind of went for it.
Paul was like, you know what, Noah, just come in for this podcast and I'm going to ask you all these questions. And by the end of it, you know, you'll have your identity.
Yeah, hopefully. But to give you a little bit of some, you're like a nearly full-time missionary.
I wouldn't say nearly full-time either. I have this weird relationship. Nearly part-time. I have this weird relationship with the word missionary.
Why is that?
The word missionary, it kind of implies a lot, doesn't it? I mean...
Yeah.
You know,
not wrong.
When you hear missionary, you think about a person who has dedicated their life to a particular country or a people
right.
group.
We think of like international, lifelong, like focused mission work.
Yeah. And I am like the aspiring missionary because I'm not, you know, I don't have a specific people group that I'm working with full time, you know, where I'm taking sabbaticals and, you know, all this other stuff that, you know, the term missionary implies. So, yeah, I wouldn't know what to call myself, but people will just keep, you know, they attach that term to me and my identity. So, yeah.
Well, I mean, I guess, yeah, we'll talk more about that for sure, because I want to hear more about, who are you?
Who am I?
Who are you?
Who am I?
But we also, for those who are listening, we have this cool little, like, globe decanter. I got for my birthday. It was pretty awesome. Yeah. So it has all the countries on it, minus Antarctica at the bottom. They kind of left them out.
Yeah, they did. But you know, I begged Paul to bring this because I felt like it matched the topic of choice for today.
It did.
You know, I mean, who doesn't want a globe, you know, on their desk?
And there's a nice cool little sailing ship in there.
Yeah. You know,
well, that's what's cool. I think I'm like afraid because I was like, okay, how do I pack this so it stays intact? I don't want it to break. I like it.
Well, I wouldn't want it to break either, but you know.
You wanted it to break.
See, I'm just secretly like
break it. But anyway, we got our first shot up. Cooper's Mark.
Okay.
This is I've never actually tried this before. I made it in a drink once, but I couldn't really get a good like taste of it. So this is going to be an interesting one, but this is your bourbon whiskey.
Oh, it's already poured. Look at that.
Cheers to you.
Wow. Cheers. Wow.
Hmm.
That's good.
It's kind of like a mix. So the guy who I bought it from, he said it's kind of what did he say? I wish I could remember what he said. It's like a mix between two. It's actually not too bad. I actually kind of like it. It's definitely like really strong. It's got, it's very, very, very strong.
Yeah.
I was expecting more of like a Maker's Mark flavor from it. I think because it's called Cooper's Mark. But it's definitely like, tastes more powerful than that, and that initial hit.
Yeah. No, the hit, like it got me, and then the flavor came, you know, and that was what made the difference for me in that little shot. Yeah.
It's kind of nice. That's not too bad. I actually kind of enjoy that. Right on. But hey, now that we're here, actually, what are your thoughts on alcohol now that you've had it first shot? what do you think about it?
So I actually have an interesting backstory to my first time having a glass of alcohol, and it was definitely not intentional. You know, I got to a point in my life where I was like, you know, alcohol is not wrong, but I'm not really interested in drinking it because I never have. And I'm going to see how long I can go without having a drink of alcohol. Mm. So I had a friend who really, really like to go to bars and drink socially with me. We'd have like a couple of drinks or something, but I would have, you know, obviously virgin stuff. But we went one time and this one drink that I got, it was like a mocktail. And I was like, man, this is so good. Like, I love this drink. So I asked the person if I could have another one. So he told somebody else to make it, but they made it like a double shot of gin.
Oh, they didn't know it was supposed to be a virgin.
Yeah, yeah. They added like a double shot of gin and like I drank it and I was like, what is this? Like, why does this taste so weird? And I gave it to my friend. He's like, you don't know what alcohol tastes like. And that was my first time. And, you know, after that, I just started, you know, I just started drinking at that point, you know. Because I was like, you know, it's no point anymore. My record is broken. I'm 23 years old. You know?
Was at that point, it was not like I feel like it wasn't a conviction. It was more of like, I've got a streak.
Yeah. I've got a streak of not drinking, you know? And that's, I wanted to keep it, but you know, after it was broken, it was like, you know, it's okay. It's okay. And, so
let's overindulge. Yeah,
let's get drunk. No, I'm joking.
We get tipsy on this show. So was there any... What was it like for you growing up? Was there like an issue with that? Like, was it frowned upon or was it just like, no one cares? Like, what was that for you growing up?
Yeah. So that's a good question. When I was a kid, I was raised in a fundamental Baptist church.
Okay.
And everything, like, it seemed like everything in the world was a sin. Like, you couldn't go to the movies. You couldn't listen to music because music was of the devil.
Yeah.
You know, you couldn't drink alcohol. You couldn't get tattoos. You know, I mean, if you drank alcohol, like you were, I mean, I literally saw them like carry out a person with tattoos one time that walked in. It was
really,
it was intense. Yeah. It was very intense. And
those are the kind of people.
You know, yeah.
Like, oh boy.
Yeah. So I was taught that all that stuff was wrong. And then eventually we all got sick of it because my mom, she would smuggle like music, like for us, you know.
what makes me laugh at that too, it's just the idea of like, so you do missions work, and I know it's like, especially in like missionaries that I know that have done work in like third world countries, there's like, oh, you smuggle Bibles in. And she's like the missionary for you guys with music.
It's true.
She's like,
true.
Here's a Coldplay album.
No, it wasn't that extreme, okay? Coldplay is like extreme.
Oh, so just
know?
Like...
Yeah, yeah. So you have to think more along the lines of like Mark Schultz, you know, like and Chris Rice. You guys remember, you know, What If Cartoons Got Saved? You guys remember that
this
song?
This is a song he wrote about lemonade. Yeah. So my brother Thomas used to listen to that song a lot.
It was a great song, you know.
He used
like,
to play Age of Empires and listen to Lemonade. That was his day.
Oh my gosh. Well, anyway,
yeah.
So basically what I'm trying to say is that alcohol was like a no-no, you know, growing up, up until my family kind of left the church. My mom specifically took us out of the church because, you know, she was sick of it. You know, the legalism was really toxic, and
it'll burn you out.
Know, yeah, it burned her out, you know, and it burned us out, and she took us out. And I think that was simultaneously a good decision and a bad decision, you know, because, you know, it was no longer like legalistic. We could listen to music then, and you know,
how did you, was your dad on board with that?
No, he wasn't. That's what made it very difficult. But,
okay.
You know, eventually God brought me to a place where I realized that, you know, that I needed him in my life, you know, because without him, I didn't have an identity. I didn't have a concept of like that there's somebody who loves me, you know, that there's somebody who has pursued me and who wants to use my life for something glorious, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So he brought me back to church, and that's when I kind of like unlearned all of the, you know, like God will hate you if you do this and if you do that, and more so the, well, you know, God does love you and he does see you, you know, with love and as his creation, and, you know, and he's calling to each of us, you know?
Mm. Did you say you switched like a AG church afterwards? Is that what it was? Okay.
Yeah.
Assembly of God, for people who don't know the acronym.
Yeah, it was. So Assemblies of God is typically very, very charismatic church, but ours was very tame. Just imagine
Which is probably better coming from like a very strict like Baptist background. Mm-hmm. it's probably a nicer transition into
no holy rollers or anything like that.
You don't want to jump from like one extreme to another extreme. You're like, oh my gosh.
Right. I don't know if I would have been ready for that. So God brought me there and I, you know, made a new church family. And and then I learned that, you know, alcohol is, it's not wrong to drink it. Like it's, you know, biblically there's no argument for that. The only argument we have against alcohol is the kind of like the drunken spirit. Like, you know, getting drunk is mentioned as simple, but you know, Jesus drank wine and other people in the Bible drank wine. And it was only mentioned as wrong when somebody got drunk, you know, or had a drunken spirit.
Yeah.
So, yep. So now I'm like, it's okay. But I feel like when you work in ministry, you have to kind of, look and see, okay, are these people that I'm working with, is it good for me to be drinking while I'm working with a specific people group? And that's kind of like, that kind of leads into like, you know, where I've been working for the last 6 months. And, you know, so for those of you who don't know me, I have worked in Central Asia for the last 6 months. And that is a place in the world that, that came out of the Soviet Union. So when the Soviet Union collapsed, all these countries gained their freedom, and alcoholism is a huge problem there. So for countries like that, you know, when you work in ministry there, it's actually advisable not to drink alcohol, you know, not to engage in that lifestyle, because, you know, you want to be the best possible example you can be for those people.
Mm-hmm.
So
cheers to that.
Oh, here we go. Round two.
Yes, that was Jameson. Much smoother, a lot softer.
I don't know about that.
What?
That one had more of like a sour bite to it.
Really?
I don't know. Maybe I just don't know how to.
I mean, it's your taste buds. You know, it's like,
it is, you know? We all
I just taste something different. That's interesting. Wow. Sorry, that's an illegal word.
My eyes water a little bit, that one.
Really?
Yeah.
So that one was harsher than the Cooper's Mark?
Yeah, the.
Really?
The last one, it had like a strong bite in the beginning, but it was like more flavor. And this one was like bite all the way bite all the way through and flavor. So, yeah.
I don't think I've ever heard that before. I usually consider Jameson as like the least bite.
Well,
hey,
maybe I'm
different
just
strokes, different folks.
That's how it is, you know?
Different strokes, different folks. Yeah, so... So was that difficult for you then to go to a place where it's advisable to not drink and be like, all right, let's abstain here?
So
not the saying like, oh, you were addicted and you know, you're like, I need a drink, but more like you know, just kind of force of habit or anything like that.
No,
it's like,
no,
because I feel like there's times where it's like, especially if I'm out with people, I don't really think about it, and it's like, oh yeah, they just hand me something. It's like, oh cool.
Yeah, so I didn't have any problem with that. You know, I didn't drink frequently enough to have like a habit for drinking.
Okay.
And what helps in that is that alcohol is really expensive.
Yeah.
And it's expensive because it's always in high demand because people love alcohol, generally speaking. You know, I didn't really indulge myself in drinking alcohol even after, you know, the point where I was like, okay, drinking is okay, you know?
Yeah.
So while I was there, I abstained from it completely, and that wasn't really a huge issue for me.
Hmm. That's cool. No, that's good. I think that's a good thing.
Yeah.
I know. Yeah, that's good. Because I know for me, it would definitely be strange to be like, oh, yeah, say no to this now. It'd have to be a conscious thought because I'm so used to just saying yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I understand that.
Especially like someone's offering you something. It's like, oh yeah, cool. Sounds good.
You know,
so, yeah,
that would
mess with me.
That reminds me. There was one time when I had a little break in between. Like it was like the end of my fourth month out there.
Hmm.
I had to, you know, go out of the country because it was all about like a visa thing, you know.
Yeah.
So my visa had expired. I had to go out of the country and then come back in. While I was out, I took the opportunity to travel to Tbilisi, which is the capital of a country called Georgia, for those of you who don't know. And they are famous for the wine that they make.
Mm.
They're world famous. And I wasn't planning on trying any of the wine while I was there, you know, because I actually had one of the ministry team members with me. And we went to a, like an old historical city. I can't pronounce the name because it's just too difficult. we went to like, it was like the first capital of Georgia. And we went there and there was all these little shops with a bunch of little trinkets and antiques and cool stuff that they were selling. And we went to this one shop and this guy brought us back there and he showed us like his winery and it was really cool. And then like he poured a glass, he didn't even ask me. He just poured a glass and he's like, here, try this. And I was like, okay, I'll make an exception because like, I didn't ask for this, but if he's offering it to me, like, from out of his hospitality, then yes, I'll accept it and not, you know, drink like
you don't want to be super like rude about it or anything.
Yeah. So that's the only exception to like I didn't drink while I was out there. You know.
Okay.
Yeah.
Which is pretty cool. That's pretty good.
Yeah. Wow. It was great wine though. I will say.
I'm sure it's world famous.
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
I'm glad you got to try it. That's awesome.
For sure.
And
nice
I get to try one of my hometown favorites.
All right.
The old Seven Bros.
You know, that one's not bad.
Wow. Wow.
It's not bad. I am generally a fan of gin.
Just gotta be a hater on everything, huh?
You know, I'm a hard man to please, so that's actually, it's not true. It's completely opposite with me.
That makes it worse now.
Yeah, I didn't want to hurt your feelings, but
so this is the old Seven Brothers.
It wasn't bad.
What didn't you like?
I don't know. I don't feel like I've gotten to a point where I can say, you know, this is what I didn't like about this alcoholic beverage.
Okay.
You know, because I haven't had enough alcohol or tried enough brands to really say like, oh, this one was more sour or this one was like more fruity. Well, you can tell when something's fruity, right? But I don't know. You know, I don't know all the terminology. You know, so.
Huh, that's interesting. Huh. Well, my mind's a little blown. You're the only one I've ever heard that didn't like it.
It's not that I didn't like it.
Annie dreams about it at night. That's.
Listen, I do really like gin.
I'm saying that my feelings are hurt. Whatever.
I like gin. I do. I didn't mean to hurt your feelings.
I'm hurt. No, I'm kidding. I'm teasing. Yeah. I really don't care.
You know, I'll buy you dinner after this. How about that? And that'll make up for it.
We're watching a Nicolas Cage movie later. Nothing can hurt me. Oh man. Well, hey, anyway, we got our main brew today, which is another hometown classic. Great Lakes Brewery. We had another Great Lakes earlier. But you said you're a lager fan. This is the Elliott Ness Amber Lager.
I've never had ambers before, so this is a first for me.
So here's another thing to disappoint you.
Oh, man, this stuff sucks.
Just hurting my feelings left and right here. But let me pour it for you. You know, it's the least I can do. Oops.
Wow, this is fancy, guys. Having a glass of beer poured for me.
There you go.
That looks beautiful.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Now I'm worried for you to try it. Like, he's just going to trash it.
If it's trashy, I'll pretend it's not this time. How about
that? Yeah, just lie to me.
Just lie to you. Okay.
But if you're telling the truth, let me know you're telling the truth.
Amazing.
I know, right? Well, at least we have this decanter for you.
Yes.
Maybe that'll appease you slightly. Hey, cheers to you. It's time.
Are we drinking the whole thing right now, or are we
You got to chug it. No. You sip it.
Okay.
We got a whole podcast to drink through it.
You're right. Now that is good.
There it is. Are you lying?
That's the best part about it. You don't know if I am or not, because I said I would, right?
I asked you to tell me you were telling the truth if you weren't lying.
I always lie.
Perfect.
So work that one out in your head.
I've already tried.
Is it that I'm lying right now? You never know.
Well, anyway, so you were telling us a little bit about some of your background, but so with missions, like what brought you to that place? We're going to start with a heavy hitter right now.
Wow. So the story behind why I went into missions, or like why I aspire to be a missionary.
So I'll preface it with this before you jump into it, and feel free to jump in on this. So it's like, when we think about missions work, I think it's like, I don't think it's a lost concept to anybody.
Yeah.
Like, for sure, everyone's like, oh, yeah, I know what you're talking about. You're someone who goes somewhere else. Typically, when we say missionary, we think of someone in, like, goes to, like, a third world country.
Yeah.
Or somewhere outside of America. I feel like it's typically developing countries that people go to, and they go and they teach the word of God. So with that, it's like, yeah, so what brought you, what led you to, like, this is what I want to do with my life?
Yeah, so my story, the beginning of that desire came when I was a young Christian. I think I was probably 18 years old. Mm-hmm. You know, I had just gotten back into church, and I was involved in everything. I involved myself in everything I possibly could. Mm. You know, I joined the young adult group because I was 18 finally, and, we were going through Matthew. And I was at home, and I was on the phone with my old girlfriend, I was reading through Matthew. No, I'm sorry. It was Acts, and it was Acts chapter 1, because I had just started reading that after finishing Matthew. In Acts chapter 1, verse 8, it's the second part of the verse there. It talks about, going out and baptizing, everything in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, going and spreading the word to the entire world. And I remember reading that and thinking, why are we here? Like, why? Like, not like as in like a what is the meaning of the universe sort of thing. Okay, we're not getting into that.
You rather
today.
Like, what is life?
What is the meaning of life? No, that's not what I mean when I say that. I mean, like, my question was at the time, like, why are so many Christians here in America just living in like as kings and queens, when our call, our direct call is to go into the entire world and to preach the gospel to every creature, mm-hmm. And baptize them, in the name of Father and Son and Holy Spirit, all that. Mm-hmm. Like, why are we not doing this? Like, why aren't we all like living in discomfort, like in some third world country and preaching the salvation of Christ to people who have never heard it before? And it took me a while to understand that, we all have our own callings in life. Some people, they work in business and they make a lot of money, and that's not a problem. But God gives the people like those preferences or those callings. And it is so that, each cog in the church is rotating. We're all working together for the building of the kingdom. So people who make a lot of money and work in business here in America and live in comfort, like, it's given to them, because God has entrusted them with that, and they can support people who live like me, or who want to live like me. Or who want to live like actual missionaries. I shouldn't even say live like me, because I'm not there yet.
Yeah, you sleep in a bed still. So
I'm not sleeping in the dirt yet, so
soon, I'm probably closer to that.
You're right. No, Paul sleeps on the floor. For some reason, he let me have his queen-size bed while I'm visiting him down here in Florida.
I enjoy the floor more.
Yeah,
The bed is junk food.
And I didn't argue with him because, a queen-size bed all to myself, that's not something I've had for a while. So, so that reading that verse was the turning point for me, like the one thing that really stood out to me my entire early Christian walk. When I really became a Christian when I was 17. That's when I really dedicated my life to the Lord. That's when I learned who He was and how He saw all of us. And after reading that verse, I knew I wanted to do missions with my life. Because I was 18, I was already already had a plan for college. I wanted to study psychology and become a counselor, counseling psychologist, because I wanted to help people, because my family had been through so much trauma. A lot of it had to do with psychology and, so I wanted to help people, who had gone through things that I had gone through, which wasn't a bad thing. But after reading that verse, like, my drive became merged with that. Like, it became like, I'm going to get a master's in counseling, and then I'm going to go into the mission field and use my master's in counseling to, like, counsel people and, you know, do things that way. Well, after graduating my fourth year with a bachelor's in psychology, I realized that, you know, I probably wouldn't be a very good counselor, you know, because I like helping friends out. But, you know, when I think about the actual career of just letting people pour out everything before you,
like, yeah,
and there's so much emotion, you know, mm-hmm. there's so much trauma, there's so much, you know, that would be a lot for me, I think, to handle. You know, at least at this current point in my life, you know, I don't feel like I'm prepared for that kind of work. So I just decided, okay, I'm going to work towards going into the mission field. And then I found an opportunity working with a pastor that I had met through a university sponsored trip to Central Asia. And he asked me to come back out and spend, you know, like half a year there. So I decided to go out and spend half a year. And yeah, so that's kind of the, if any questions with that or?
Yeah, what? No, so I'm curious too. I'm curious about it because you mentioned it a few times about comfort and discomfort.
Yeah.
And I know I've seen you wear shirts that say seek discomfort. So,
yeah.
Which I guess on a front side, I'm not totally against either. I think we need to challenge ourselves, but I was interested because you put that as part of kind of your journey to getting to being a missionary. So, like, what does that mean?
Seeking discomfort.
Yeah. So I'll preface it with this as well. So you said that, oh, like, why are we living here in comfort when we should be out, you know, in other, you know, the far parts of the world in discomfort? It's like, yeah. What does that mean? How does that play a role in it?
That thought came to me because when you think about the unreached populations of the world, and there are a lot, there are over 6,000 unreached people groups.
Sure.
And only, I think the statistic, I don't know if it's changed within the last year, but when I checked last year, it was, I think, 0.38% of missionaries, 0.38% of missionaries travel to the unreached people groups of the world. You know, that's less than 0.5% of the missionaries we have. And none of them are going, you know, and none of the other missionaries are going to those 6,000 unreached people groups.
Sure.
You know, which is a lot. There's a lot of people that are unreached.
Yeah.
And I think I was so harsh when I first learned that just kind of harsh within myself and like, kind of like, I don't know, like I had this idea of like, why aren't we going there? You know, maybe it's because we want to be in comfort and maybe that's a problem. Like maybe... Maybe seeking comfort.
What does comfort mean?
Yeah.
Let me start with that.
Comfort means like just seeking. So I refer to America generally as a rat race. And because, you know, everybody is trying to improve their lives, you know, materially, usually, you know, you don't really find a lot of people that are not trying to do that, you know.
Sure.
Unless they have no drive towards that, you know. And I think that, you know, seeking comfort would mean just seeking to become more materially successful and to be more live more comfortably, you know, not to have the challenges that you would have in, you know, maybe a third world country or a place where you don't have the opportunity to move up on the social ladder or the economic ladder, I should say, you know. So I wouldn't say that, you know, most people are like that here in America, like in the sense of like they're just looking for an economic, you know, for just economic success, because I know a lot of people here who are, you know, really great and they have great pursuits and ambitions and, you know, and they have a heart for the Lord, you know. I just think that, you know, generally speaking, when you look at the world without Christ, what you find is people who are trying to improve their lives, their families' lives, economically, socially, you know, that's kind of the rat race, you know. Even when you go to other countries, people without Jesus, they think that, you know, if I could only go to America, you know, if I could only go to the West. I will be rich. My family will be rich, and I won't have to worry about anything anymore. You know, that is the seeking comfort that I'm talking about. Whereas seeking discomfort for me, if you guys don't know the motto yet, it actually comes from a YouTube channel called Yes Theory. And they promote this idea of seeking discomfort and like making risky choices, and not like in a dumb sense, but in a way that, you know, in a way that promotes growth. Seeking discomfort for me, though, what it means is kind of going against the grain, and not like, for me, it's not about seeking material growth. You know, it's not about being rich, you know, for me. Like, I don't have a desire to be rich, you know. I don't have a desire to have a big house or, you know, like a fancy car or, you know, any of those things in life. And none of those desires are bad. You know, you can have those desires. I'm just saying, like, for me, seeking discomfort comes above that. And it goes to, you know, like, I want to be the guy that goes to the people who are not reached with the gospel. You know, I want to go to the, because if no one else is going to go, then I want to go, you know. And that's kind of like my drive behind all of that.
That's cool. Yeah. So it's really just forget running water.
Single tear goes down my cheek. If you guys.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Actually, when he came over to my house, he was washing his hands. He's like, "This is incredible. I've never seen such technology."
I felt like Gollum, you know. My precious, you know.
Okay. Right. He was washing his hands for hours, like, just turning the faucet on and off.
Yeah, it was like coming into a new world.
You're right, it's a whole new world, you know.
That's funny.
What stories do you have for us?
Oh man, what stories?
I'm sure you got something good, even you know, if it's not good. Like, so, I mean, yeah. It could be as exciting or as boring. I mean, I've heard from missionaries. I've heard crazy stories, like.
Yeah.
One of the guys I know, I don't remember where they were missionaries at. I've heard stories about, like, the church that they were in, they were taking communion one time, and someone snuck in and put, like, poison in the communion cups, and they drank it, and everyone was fine. And the guy,
oh my gosh.
The guy who poisoned them was like, what the heck? Like, who is this God? You know, it's like, stories like that insane. But I know there's other stories where it's just like, yeah. You watch TV all day because, right. You know, it's, you're living a long-term life there.
Yeah.
Which I think is different from, and I'm more in favor of that than I am for, like, sorry, short-term missions work. I'm not a huge fan of it. I understand the point of it, but yeah.
Okay.
So like, with that, it's like, what does that look like for you then?
Okay, so you want to hear the stories first, or you want to hear my opinion on short-term missions?
I know, I just threw a grenade into the combo. Let's, let's talk about short-term missions. Everyone's fuming now.
Okay, like, yeah, everybody's angry.
Everyone who's been on a short-term mission trip, they're like, what the heck?
Hey, I haven't said what I thought yet, so if you're angry already,
yeah, right, you just wait.
That, let's just take that before the Lord right now.
But I will say, I've never technically been on, like, a short-term mission trip, unless you count, like, helping, like, a poor community for like 2 days because like we did like a game or festival or outreach for them kind of thing. Like,
yeah.
VBS, I guess you could call that a short-term outreach.
So my opinion is probably going to be very unpopular. Okay.
Okay.
You know, and more people are kind of jumping on board with these ideas as well, you know, but the majority still kind of hold to the old ideas about short-term missions.
Mm-hmm.
To be honest with you, I don't even like the idea of calling them missions trips, because it really, what it does is it takes the actual idea of mission and the word mission and the term missionary, and it waters it down to something that is basic and something that is not very helpful at all in determining, you know, the real work that's being done, you know, in the world. So short-term missions, why do I think that? And whenever you do short-term mission trips, you know, the general thing that happens is you go to a country, there's already an established ministry there. You know, there's always, almost always already an established ministry there, an established church, some pastor that you're working with.
Mm-hmm.
And what is it? You're you know, either hugging people on the street and just telling them that Jesus loves them, you know, depending on if they can understand you or not.
Sure.
You know, you're helping to set up for a conference, but you're not participating unless you speak the language.
Mm.
You know, you're painting a church or you're building a church, which can be done by the local population, you know, which is statistically is very damaging, you know, for short-term missions groups to go in and build churches. You're taking
like
money
jobs
out
away
of the
economy.
Yeah, you're taking jobs away from people. What I think about it is, you know, it's creating this idea of we need the Western church to be successful.
Mm.
You know, it's creating this idea of I depend on these Americans or whatever country you come from for finances or for building this church or for getting these things done or for getting this car or for, you know, whatever it is there. And I've seen it firsthand as well. You know, I can kind of mesh in a story here and, you know, kind of share this with you. There was a trip I went on, I won't say the country. But there was a group of people in this country all over, you know, the southeast portion of this country, who loved the missionary that I was working with.
Mm.
They, you know, had a long, long relationship. It was 20 something years, 30 years that this person had been going to these countries for months at a time, sometimes years at a time. And when we went with them, you know, what I witnessed was they treated this person, they treated us as if we were gods.
Mm.
You know, I'd never seen anything like it before, you know. And like, you know, and it came down to a point where they were talking about their needs, you know, and they're like, hey, we need money for this. Mm. And our leader's like, well, you know, like, I'm not always going to be here. You know, who do you think your provider is? And they're like, you're our provider.
Mm.
And that just like stopped everything, you know, like, and my heart kind of broke a little bit because I'm thinking like, we're teaching these people that we are their providers. You know, they're no longer relying on God for the things that they need. They're not no longer, you know, they're not getting the point of Jesus. Jesus isn't a person who comes and fixes all of your financial needs. You know, I wouldn't say that that's his direct, you know, mission in your life. Jesus is someone who comes to align your heart with his own, you know, and when you get saved, that's the process of sanctification. You know, God begins to turn your heart and align your heart with his. And you know, and then you begin to look for him for everything that you need. Mm-hmm. Lord, I need, you know, this thing is going on in my life. You know, your will be done. This is what I'm struggling with. This is my financial need right now, you know. But I know that you're there and I can hope in you. And wow, this is getting deep. So like that's kind of the effect of that I've seen in short-term missions. Even this was kind of like half and half. It was like short-term, long-term sort of deal. But you know, when we participate in, you know, doing things that kind of create this need for ourselves, you know, the focus is no longer on Christ and God as the provider.
Mm-hmm.
The focus then becomes us, and we are the ones that are saving them. We are the ones that are improving their lives, you know. And so,
yeah. And that's kind of where I've gotten to it as well, with especially with like short terms. It's like you've shared some stuff that shows it can be somewhat damaging in some ways.
Yeah,
but I think it's like for us to recognize where it does more for, I think even Trey said this on a previous episode, and it's like, it does more for the people that went on it than it did for the people that they went to.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, yeah, for you being the person that went through the trouble of, you know, raising the funds to go, and then going and, you know, maybe even building some buildings or like painting a church or whatever it is, or just standing on a street corner yelling at people in a foreign language.
Yeah.
It's like, Like, maybe that's what you did, but that's more beneficial for you than it is for them.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think if we recognize it in that way, I think it would change what it is, or maybe even our view on it a little bit.
Yeah.
But what do you think about that?
Yeah, I have a solution. Mm. This is in the work sort of thing right now.
Okay.
So don't hate me if you think that I'm, you know, theologically inaccurate or, you know, it's not going to work or whatever. But, you know, I think that short-term missions should be rebranded as international ministerial, international ministerial immersion trips.
Why do the words have to be longer?
It has to be longer because it paints a different picture, doesn't it? I mean, think about that. International ministerial immersion trips.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's no longer, the idea isn't any longer that you're a missionary now, that you're going on the short-term trip.
Sure.
The idea is, I'm going to this country and I'm experiencing the ministry of Christ in another country from another people. You know, and I am like, I'm participating in some way, you mm-hmm. know, and I'm experiencing this and deciding, hey, is this country the country that God is calling me to, you know? And my fun little acronym, you know, the International Ministerial Immersion Trips, if you shorten it, so it's like first letters, it's I might, you know, I might be a full-time missionary to this country.
Okay, that's interesting.
Yeah, so
I feel like we could just call it just like a vacation with extra steps.
Vacation with extra steps. So yeah, so like that's kind of like the name solution there. And the other solution is to let it be a cultural ministerial immersion kind of trip. You know, mm-hmm. like, you know, don't make the main purpose that you're going on this trip that an idea of I'm going to help these people. You're not. Like, I mean, you might be assisting and if you're building a church, sure. like it helps in the short term, but in the yeah. long term, it's damaging to a country, right?
Yeah.
But don't make the idea about you because it's not about you. It's not about you going. It's not about you being, you know, a valuable asset to the people that work in third world countries that are native there.
Mm-hmm.
It's not about that. It's about going and experiencing a culture and God's people within that culture in that country and deciding, God, are you calling me here?
Mm.
Are you calling me to work with these people, to learn their language, to adopt their culture, to just surrender basically my life to this work to reach people for your glory. And that's why I think it's so important to change the terminology that we use for short-term trips, because you know, like when you get rid of all of the stuff that says, hey, look at me and look at what I'm doing, you know, and the children that I, you know, have pictures with, you know, like there's definitely
it's true. I feel like if you start to paint it in that light, you probably have less people going on it too.
Yeah.
Maybe. I don't know. That makes I kind of appreciate that a little bit more too. It's like, yeah, let's be more intentional, a little more honest about what this is.
Yeah, yeah. And when you do that, when you're honest about what it is,
yeah,
you know, you can enjoy it so much more.
It's true. That's very yeah. true. Because you recognize it for what it is.
Exactly. And yeah. So I've been on short-term trips, and I did call them mission trips at the time. But after going and being there for 6 months
mm-hmm.
and... You know, and it wasn't like a 6 months of like every day was like a vacation, cool, like I'm going snowboarding and, you know,
sure.
horseback riding and everything like that. It wasn't like that, you know. When you go long term, you are living with the people. You are learning the language. You are, you know, you're learning the culture. You are,
yeah.
you know, you're learning how you are just another cog in the kingdom. You're not, you know, like it's a blessing for people to have Americans come and live with them and work long term. It is.
Mm.
And that's, I'm not trying to diminish that part of it, but
sure.
I'm just trying to take the focus off of us,
mm-hmm.
you know? So, yeah.
Well, I think the blessing you can view that as is, you know, the way that, you know, people maybe think about the U.S. in other cultures sometimes. Mm-hmm. not to say that's a good or bad thing, but it's like, yeah, there is like a sense of like, oh, like that's the dream for some people.
Yeah.
And so when you're over there helping them, or anyone's over there helping them from a Western country, that could be like a privilege for them. Maybe that's a benefit, hopefully.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I definitely, I appreciate you saying that earlier too. I definitely agree. And I think that, you know, it's elevating that culture. And I think that's the important thing too. So it's not that we're just trying to impose our ideas and stuff onto them, but it's like, we want you guys to develop your own culture, your own identity.
Exactly. Exactly. Because, you know, when like, there were so many times when I was out there where I was like, man, because I don't know Russian fluently. Mm. That's the language they speak out there in Central Asia, by the way, if you don't know. Because I don't speak Russian fluently, in this particular circumstance, I am useless to the ministry. I'm just I'm just this American guy that's, it's cool that I'm there because I'm American. I'm in like this country no one's ever heard of.
Sure.
But, you know, that's as far as it goes. And there were a lot of times out there where I was like, man, like I had to like be humbled by God because I was like, man, I need to be more, like I need to do more. Like I need to make myself more valuable. But God was like, no, like just look at how much this ministry functions well on its own, you know, without you, you know, and that's the reality that, you know, we all need that kind of reality check when we go into missions. It's not going to be a thing like where like you're the main centerpiece.
Sure.
You know, you're not going to be up there every Sunday preaching, you know, for these people, unless you become an actual pastor at an actual church, you know.
Yeah.
Which you could do, I guess, if you learned the language fluently enough to preach.
Be able to teach. Yeah. Yeah.
And that takes a lot of work and a lot of time.
What would you say? What are things that has changed your theology now that you have more experience, like doing missions work?
Something that's changed my theology.
Yeah.
So I think that I don't know. I feel like there could be a lot.
I'm sure there's things that like theologically we hold very theoretically. You know, it's like, oh, in theory, like that's what I would do probably in that situation, or this is what I think in theory. And then we experience reality and it's like, oh, wow, that changes something.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think a good example would be South Asia. Mm-hmm. You know, I've been to South Asia. I spent a month there, a month and a half or like a month and a week, something like that. And while I was there, I won't say the country again, just for,
yeah, you're good.
You know, that for reasons. Mm-hmm. But while I was there in South Asia, you know, I was just so surprised at the amount of spirituality in South Asia, you know, because here in America, we have all these distractions, you know, we have technology, we have, you know, all the stuff, television and media and science to kind of distract us and tell us that there is no real spiritual like stuff going on. We don't really see it that much here in America. I mean,
sure.
You know, I'm not saying it doesn't happen. I'm just saying it's not public.
It's not public, but it's not popular.
It's not widespread like it is in South Asia. While I was there, I, you know, there were a lot of instances where I encountered, you know, just really bizarre things. I mean, there was a lot of services where people, I'd never seen a truly charismatic service before until I went to South Asia, you know, where people were yelling in tongues and rolling on the floor, you know, with the slain the spirit thing and people falling over and some people looking like they're just paralyzed on the floor and people crying and sobbing and laughing and, you know, like,
like, get me out of here.
Yeah. For me, that was a huge shock, you know, because I, you know, and people getting healed as well. That's something I should mention too, because there were people that were healed during services, which was really fantastic just to be able to be there for that.
I feel like each of those is like, probably like a whole episode on its own.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You know, and we often have this thing like in the West where we kind of scoff at such ideas, you know, like we because there are fakers out there. We know that there are, you know, I'm not naming any names right now, but, you know, there are definitely some false teachers and false preachers out there that fake healings, that they fake the slain in the spirit thing. They fake the tongues thing, but
yeah,
you know, and there are people out there that do it too. But out there, you're more likely to see something real. And I have a really good example. Something a little more bizarre, something a little different than maybe what you've heard before.
Yeah.
There was a time where we visited an orphanage in a very unheard of village. It was in the middle of nowhere, it felt like. And, you know, in this village or town or whatever you want to call it, you know, this orphanage was ran by two Christians. Mm-hmm. You know, one guy from the West and one person who was more native to the region. And they had about, you know, 50, 60 kids, you know, that they were taking care of. This country is very sad in a lot of ways in how they deal with child deformities, you know, and when babies are born or if they're born a woman, sometimes, like if they're born with a deformity, what they do, this is a confirmed thing that we've heard, is the hospital, the nurses of the hospital will tell the woman that the baby was a girl and that it was dead on birth. But even if it's not dead, even if it's a boy, they'll tell them that their child died and they literally throw them in a dumpster.
Wow.
In the back of the hospital, like outside the back of the hospital. Damn. And, you know, like that's how worthless life is in this country. And it's just so like heart wrenching, you know, I'd never heard anything like that before, you know, just how, you know, how meaningless life must be, you know, for these people, you know, that teach that life has meaning. You know, they in this country, they teach that, you know, all life is sacred, but then they turn around and they treat life like this, you know. Well, you know, a lot of those babies were rescued by these people. You know, they would rescue babies that were thrown away. Mm-hmm. They'd rescue, you know, little girls that had been raped and that who were going to be murdered, because when you're raped, when you lose your virginity, you can be honor killed. You know, you can, you know, just all these awful things. So they'd rescue these children, and raise them. And this is such a beautiful thing. And they teach them in the ways of the word and the gospel and teach them about Jesus. And I just loved it. And every day they have a daily schedule. I love it. And they, you know, they have worship in the morning and they have worship at night and they have time in the word together, you know, and it was amazing to see while I was there. Well, while we were there, we actually put on a show for them. One of the nights that we were there, we put on how do I describe it?
Like a sketch or something?
It was like a sketch, yeah. So like the sketch was based around like the story of like this donkey who, he was gray and he found a magic wishing cave where he went in and he could change his color. So he went in and I wish I'm black. And then he would come out and he's like, you know, there are other two characters who like try to like argue with each other about which is better. And, you know, he'd go back in and change his color again and then change his color again. And there's one time where he just couldn't decide and then he came out a zebra. And the cave collapsed, then he couldn't change it again.
Oh, wow.
You know, and the whole moral of the story was that, like, you know, when we choose Christ, you know, we don't go back. You know, it's about, like, not going back and, you know, not turning back because, you know, Christ is it, you know?
Yeah.
And so we're talking about this moral at the end of the sketch, and the government shows up. Like the government officials, because they show up often to try to harass.
This was not part of the sketch.
Yeah. This was not part of the sketch. They showed up in vehicles outside. We didn't hear them when they came, but you know, the government came often to try and find any reason to shut down the orphanage because they knew that they're Christian and they're teaching the children, like, you know, about Jesus and stuff. So they look for every reason to shut them down. I've heard about them like stealing forms and then asking them for the forms, like, you have to show us these forms, but they had already stolen them, and if they didn't have them, like, they, you know, they would take the children away. They've tried to steal children from the orphanage, like straight up just go in and take children and run away. Like, they've tried a whole bunch of stuff to just try to shut down this orphanage and, you know, get the kids out of there, but it every time God like comes through with like some miracle. And it's just like, I heard a lot of the stories, and I'm not going to talk about all of them, but, you know, the one firsthand that I had was when these government officials showed up, we didn't know it. The only person who knew it was the person who ran the orphanage. So we're upstairs in the upstairs room talking about Jesus to like 60 kids, and, you know, the windows are wide open. you know, like they're big windows too, mm-hmm. and the it's not like very high off the ground.
Yeah.
One of the people comes up and they're like, hey, like you guys need to hide because if they find you in here, this orphanage is going to get shut down. So we went and hid in a room. And, you know, after a while, the guy comes up and he's like, okay, they went away. And I just want to tell you like this awesome testimony.
Mm.
And he says, when I went down to greet them, the first thing they said when they greeted me was, that is some really beautiful music that's playing up in that upper room. And the crazy thing was, there was no music at all. There was no music. It was just us talking about Jesus to the kids.
Hmm.
And if they would have had any suspicion, if they would have came up and came looking for us and found us, like it would have been over.
Wow.
But, you know, like, you know, we believe that like God like sent his angels and they just this heavenly music was like playing that these government officials heard and they thought it was beautiful and they asked a couple of questions and they went away.
Wow.
You know, we're getting chills just talking about it, you know?
Yeah, I see why.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
That was that was something that shoved over my theological shelf. You know, I encountered a lot there. There's crazier things I could tell you about, but I'm not going to talk about it now because, you know, for time purposes. But,
yeah,
you know, just everything I encountered in this country, and especially there, kind of showed me that I had been putting God in a box. Mm. You know, I was like, God, you know, you're all powerful, but you can only do these things, you know, which doesn't make a lot of sense when you think about it. But really, God can do anything.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't mean he will do everything. You know, it doesn't mean that, you know, it doesn't mean that we should go seeking a commodity from him, you know, as if healing or tongues or anything like that is a commodity that God offers to us. It's not, you know, these miraculous things that God does, they all have a purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And that's every time I've encountered it, it's all been about changing somebody's life or changing somebody's heart. Or, you know, something, you know, for the growth of his kingdom, the benefit of his kingdom. And it's just awesome. So, yeah,
that's cool.
Little story there.
So I'll ask you this question, too, as we close out here.
Yeah.
Because I think it's so common for, I think what I've written here is it's so common for people to go to a very like empowering worship service, you know, or whatever it is, or they meet a missionary and they hear some of the stories and they walk away like, oh, I'm going to be a missionary.
Yeah.
But often I feel like the follow through in that is so lacking because it's like that's wasn't really your calling. You just got really emotional about it.
Yeah.
So how do you parse between this is an actual calling and this is just an emotional feeling? So it's like, how do you determine that being a long-term missionary like that, living this type of lifestyle?
Yeah.
How do you determine if that's for you or not?
So one of the things that I did to help myself figure that out, because it is a big question that you have to ask yourself. And I still ask myself that question. You know, it's important to just keep asking yourself, is this what God is asking me to do right now with my life?
Yeah.
You know, because even if you are called to the mission field, God could have you there for a short time to teach you something, and then that could change, you know? So one of the things I did to help myself figure it out at first was when I was trying to decide what countries I wanted to visit for the kind of like the immersion trip sort of idea, I had a choice between a group of countries that, like, there was a reason for me to go there, you know?
Mm.
Like, they were on my bucket list. You know,
you felt like a desire to go there.
Like there was already a desire to go there, like a knowledge about the countries. There was already a knowledge about the people and the language. And there was already I had like a person I was interested in dating that lived in one of those countries.
Mm.
So like I had a reason to go there.
Yeah.
You know, like beyond just missions. And then there was another set of countries, which I hadn't heard about any of them except for one. You know, I had only heard about one of the countries and I didn't know anything about it, you know. And this set of countries, I had no connections. None of my friends were going to be on the team. You know, like there was no reason for me to go besides this is a missional, like, you know, this is like a short-term trip, you know, to experience like these countries, the ministry of these countries. And I backed away from the countries that I had a connection to. And I said, okay, not this time, you know, which I had done that a lot. Actually, I had a lot of opportunities to go to that country, and God kind of shut the door on me, you know, which is good, because I didn't need to go there yet.
Yeah.
But these other countries I had no connection to, I was like, you know, I'm going to go here, you know, because if I go here and I can, and this feels, and I don't know how to describe this. It would really show me, you know, like, is this for me? If I'm going to a place where, you know, the only reason I'm going is for exposure to the international missions, you know, and that's the only reason, the only connection. And when I went there, I had the time of my life, and I made so many friends, and I fell in love with all those countries that I went to, you know, in Central Asia. And now I'm working with them again, you know, or I've worked with them again for 6 months, you know, those same people. And they want me to come back for a longer time, you know, which is an amazing feeling, you know, and of course I prayed about it too. You know, that's, I just wanted to share that part of it with you, because so many times we try to figure out if we want to do missions by going to the countries that are the most attractive to us.
Yeah.
You know, and the real thing is that you won't know when you're going to a country that you have a connection to, you know, like, you might find out, but it's easy to get distracted during a short-term immersion trip, you know, because it's all fun. Mm. It's all fun and games most of the time, you know, even like with the work, it's fun because you're with people that speak your language anyway.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, it feels good. And, you know, so I would encourage you to like, if you have the opportunity to go on a short-term trip to some place that you have no, like, idea, like, Lord, what is this place? You know, like, I would take that opportunity and just, while you're there, pray and pray and pray and ask God, like, Lord, is this a place that, you know, you want me to be in? Is this a job that you want me to do? You know, and, you know, it's not the same way for every person. I mean, prayer is a big thing, and you know, God will open and close those doors as well. You know, that's another factor in there. Like, there are countries that I tried to go to where God was like, no, like, you can't go there right now. Like, I haven't called you there, you know? And then God opened the door for one of the countries for that last 6 months, you know, all of them, like, everyone I tried was closed in Central Asia, except for one, and God directed me there. And what happened was, I didn't know it. What happened was, every person from the previous team I worked with, like the native team that I worked with 2 years ago, was on the team in the city that I went to.
Wow.
Yeah. And I had no idea, you know? So God was like, I'm going to have you go here, you know? And, you know, like, is missions in my future? Only God can say, you know? I want to go back. I want to work in the mission field. I've been learning Russian, you know, I've been preparing myself, or trying to prepare myself, but it's ultimately in God's hands in the end. Mm-hmm. And that is the mentality that I feel like we should all have, but it's hard to fall out of sometimes, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's true. That's a lot of stuff.
Yeah. It's a lot.
That's good.
Information overload.
We'll close the tab on that.
Oh my gosh, I didn't drink as much as you did.
And here I am, finishing this bad boy. But yeah, dude, thank you so much for being here. The Noah White.
Thanks for having me on. You know, like, this was really cool. I've never podcasted like this before.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah, so.
It's a good time. We like just chatting. That's all we're doing.
Yeah, you know, and so maybe in the future when I come down, you know, we can do it again.
Oh, yeah. We'll get the old tray boy in here.
Yeah.
But yeah, thank you. So I guess to summarize, there's a lot in there. But I think to summarize, as far as what I'll say is, like, when it comes to missions work, is it seems like if that's something that you feel like you're interested in or something you're looking forward to, yeah, pursue those immersion trips.
Yeah.
You know, it could be in the form of a short-term trip or however your church wants to label it or however whoever wants to label it. But understand going there for the sake of, is this somewhere I could see myself long term? Yeah. Whether that's 6 months, whether that's, you know, 10 years, whatever that looks like.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah. And it sounds like you're saying, try the places that don't seem that attractive to you. Maybe try those out. See where God is calling you. God's going to open and close those doors. But we need to just keep pressing forward and try to open the doors and see which one's open. But yeah, that's great. Thank you so much for sharing all that. That's a lot of stuff.
Yeah, anytime.
I know there's a lot in there that we can talk about and stuff that we've alluded to as well. So it's cool to hear those and, yeah, just some of, like, real-life situations as well.
Yeah.
But so, is there anything you want to close with?
No, not really. I just, you know, anybody that's listening to this, I just want to encourage you that, you know, God has got you no matter what. You know, He will direct your life as long as you're looking to Him. You know, if you're worried about, you know, whether you're called to missions or not, just continuously every day, give it to Him, you know, and He will open the doors as you try to open, or as He will open the doors that are right for you as you try to open them. You know, you don't know if a door is locked unless you try the knob. So, you know, so just,
I think it's important to recognize that we're all missionaries in our own way. Some of that, I think for the vast majority of us, it looks like the people you go to work with, the people you do life with, which is a very Christianese way of saying that. Like for me, it's like, I don't think international missions is my calling, at least right now.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all right. But that seems like that was yours, at least for that time. Maybe it is again.
Yeah.
It sounds like for you, hopefully it is again.
Yeah, I hope so. You know,
but we'll see what God has for you. But yeah, thank you guys so much for listening and watching maybe if you're doing both.
And drinking.
Yeah. Drink along with us. We got the old Elliott Ness. Cheers to you, Cleveland, Ohio. Check us out on Instagram if you guys want to keep up with what's going on. Sometimes we just post fun things because we're funny guys. Trey and I. that's tipsy_theology.
I did not know that.
And
so
if you
need to go follow.
Dude, you got
to
follow us.
Yeah, isn't that crazy?
We post a whole bunch of stuff. And if you like the show, you want to support us, we would greatly appreciate that. Go to patreon.com/tipsytheology. We've got a lot of bonus content there for you guys as well, if that's what you're interested in. As far as we're going to be offering live streams and live Q&As that are private to Patreon. And on top of that, we're going to be doing devotionals, and you'll get some merch stuff as well that we're working on. We got it in the works right now, but we got a lot of cool stuff. So check us out there. And thank you so much to Maximize Digital Media and Annie Uli for producing this episode.
Yeah, Annie.
And we will catch you guys on the next one.
Yeah. Goodbye, guys.